Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgebeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello, and welcome to What is Going On's Truth in Medicine show, co-hosted by me, Sandy Sedgebeer.
And by me, Dr. Donnie Swarden.
This is what happens when you're
exciting,
in new locations. It is. According to the World Health Organization, homeopathy is the world's second largest system of medicine for primary health care, with more than 300 million users in over 80 countries, including the British monarchy. Indeed, Queen Elizabeth II is a long-term patron of the Royal London Homeopathic Hospital, and Prince Charles is an active supporter of homeopathic and complementary medicine.
And even so, with its long history of usage, recently homeopathy has been a hotly debated subject, with supporters and detractors in equal measure arguing vehemently for or against its perceived benefits. But now, an independent, third-generation family, German-owned pharmaceutical company is shining new light on an old debate with the development of a number of FDA-registered homeopathic injectable medicines that are being used to bring new hope and relief to sufferers of depression, pain, inflammation, liver and gallbladder issues, and many others.
So, what is the truth about homeopathy? Tonight, Dr. Warden and I are going to be digging deep into the history, science, and the politics of homeopathy, as well as the new novel treatments that are emerging.
And we'll be introducing you to Dr. David Riley, who is a board member of the Academy of Integrative Health and Medicine and the Homeopathic Pharmacopeia Convention of the U.S. Dr. Riley lectures internationally on different styles of homeopathic prescribing, and he's also an expert in research and regulatory issues.
So, Dr. Warden, homeopathy was developed by a German medical doctor named Samuel Hahnemann around 1796, a time when the accepted medical remedies were often dangerous for the patient. There was a joke that more people died of medical treatment than from the disease itself.
Correct, but the same holds true today, at least in the United States. Medical treatment is the third leading cause of death after cancer and heart disease, Sandy. So, and I'm not talking about medical mistakes, but deaths from properly prescribed treatment. So side effects. Let's talk a little bit about that. Traditional or allopathic medicine is structured around the Greek word, which means allo, which means against. So it's surgery. It's medicines that work against a problem and most of their medications. But on the other hand, the word homeopathy is derived from the Greek word that means homeo, which means similar. So I explain this to my patients to think of it kind of like a vaccine. And homeopathic physicians treat a disease by the administration of minute doses of a medicine. And these principles, those laws of similars, not only initiates a healing response, but it encourages a respect, you know, for the body's own wisdom, that it can heal itself if it's given the opportunity. So some symptoms, a good example is like a fever. That may represent the very best effort that our body has in a defense that it makes against bacteria. But our medicines, the traditional medicines, when we put that hot on, we want to bring that fever down. In homeopathy, it's trying to utilize the body's own defenses, not inhibiting it or suppressing it, but working with it. So that's the excitement about homeopathy.
Wow. Well, now is a good time to introduce our guest, Dr. David Riley, a medical doctor, board member of multiple homeopathic associations, and editor of three medical journals. Dr. Riley lectures internationally on different styles of homeopathic prescribing, including clinical and classical homeopathy, I need to get my teeth in tonight, bioregulatory medicine, and here's one that I could trip up over, anthroposophical medicine. Dr. Riley, welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome, Dr. Riley.
I'm glad to be here. Yes. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah.
Do you?
So, Dr. Riley, yeah, you and I have been working together on. Yeah. No, I bet he doesn't. So, Dr. Riley, you and I have been working together on some medical case histories and some research projects, and I'm really excited for our listeners to hear your expertise. And as a traditional medical doctor, can you tell them your story of how you first came to know homeopathy as the medicine and why you started utilizing it? I think it's an interesting story.
Well, I had, so I'm board certified in internal medicine. I went to conventional medical training, and I was I had just finished my internal medicine residency, and I had a public health scholarship for medical school, and so I was working in a clinic in New Mexico, and I had the opportunity to try some homeopathic remedies on patients that I had had really no success with. I had the most striking patient was I had a patient with an adhesive capsulitis, and he was unable to take his hand out of his pocket. And so he just walked around, and he didn't actually look like he had a problem, but he kept his hands in his pocket, and his left hand could only come out of his pocket with a great amount of pain. And he was an artist and liked to carve things, and it was a great limitation. And so he also had diabetes. And so I had him see an endocrinologist. We had his diabetes managed. I had him see an orthopedic surgeon who said, well, he has an adhesive capsulitis, but because he has diabetes, I don't really want to do anything under general anesthesia. I had him see a massage therapist and an osteopath, and he got a little bit of benefit from both of those therapies, but he still had a frozen shoulder. And so I had been exploring homeopathy and thinking about other ways to begin to do things, and I said, well, I have these homeopathic medicines here. Let's see, which seem to be indicated for adhesive capsulitis. Let's try a little bit of this. So this was an injectable remedy, and 24 hours later, the patient came back and had not quite normal range of motion, but almost normal range of motion. And I began thinking, this is not supposed to happen. When you treat people with a long-term chronic condition, these things are supposed to take a while to resolve. And it did take a while to completely resolve, but he got immediate short-term benefit. And that one case got me thinking that, well, I need to begin to study more of this. And so from that point, I went on and studied more homeopathy. I did a fair amount of training. And then I also got interested in research, because I'm pretty much of the opinion that everybody ought to be able to show some evidence for why what they think works is working. And, you know, we'll probably all learn something about why things work, why they don't work, what works together, and all these sorts of things. So I became involved in a fair amount of research efforts in homeopathy. But that one case was the one case that got me started.
Dr. Riley, tell us about the political climate. There seems to be some confusion in the public's mind, and the media isn't helping by publishing articles saying that homeopathy is dangerous and doesn't work, which of course has supporters up in arms and wanting to retaliate by starting petitions to save it. So what's the truth of the situation? What's going on right now in the USA and around the world?
Well, the truth is complicated. One of the things that's unique about homeopathy is in most places around the world, homeopathy is classified as a drug therapy. Whereas, for example, herbal medications or phytopharmacy in many parts of the world is classified as a drug therapy, in other parts it's not. So in the United States, since 1938, when the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act was rewritten, it made reference to pharmaceutical therapies needing to be in a pharmacopoeia, and one of the pharmacopoeias mentioned was the homeopathic pharmacopoeia of the United States. So the two big ones are the USP, the United States Pharmacopoeia for Conventional Medicine, and the homeopathic pharmacopeia for homeopathic medication. And so those were both officially recognized in the Code of Federal Regulations. Now, this does not mean that they're going to be paid for by insurance companies. It just means that they're generally recognized. So the FDA regulates homeopathy for good manufacturing practice. They do go into companies to make sure that their manufacturing facilities meet the various requirements for pharmaceutical productions. And in 1961, in the late 1950s, there was a significant medical problem with a conventional drug called thalidomide, which was causing a lot of birth defects in women who'd taken it for nausea of pregnancy. And that one event led in 1962 to what's called the Kefauver-Harris Amendment, which required the FDA to regulate all new medical devices and pharmaceuticals and evaluate them for efficacy and safety. Up until that time, they hadn't really been doing a lot of pre-approval evaluation. And so, but what they had to do in 1962, okay, so that's fine. We'll deal with all new pharmaceutical drugs and medical devices, but what are we going to do about everything that's already on the market? And so they went through an evaluation process, and they basically grandfathered most of the things that were on the market as being allowed to stay on the market. And so that's pretty much where homeopathy has been. And then in 1988, the FDA published what's called the Compliance Policy Guide. And that details, that provides guidance to a pharmaceutical company for how they might, how they should market and label pharmaceutical drugs. And so they recognize that there's other countries in the world that regulate homeopathy and have homeopathic pharmacopoeias. The big national organizations that regulate homeopathy are the HPUS in the United States, the German Pharmacopoeia in Germany, the French Pharmacopoeia in France, the Brazilian Pharmacopoeia in Brazil, and the Indian Pharmacopoeia in India. Those are the five major pharmacopoeias that interact to some extent with each other and have different regulatory requirements. So most homeopathic drugs that are marketed and sold in this company are represented in one of those pharmacopoeias, and they're recognized as homeopathic drugs in some markets in the world. So that's kind of the regulatory environment, but it makes for a lot of confusion because here you have homeopathic drugs, and if you look at just the concentration, you'll find that they're dilute and they're classified as drugs. Yet you can have an herbal product from which a homeopathic medication is derived, which is in a much stronger concentration, which is classified as a medical food. So it's a little bit confusing, and that causes a lot of confusion. But that is the regulatory framework, and that's independent of the scientific framework.
Right.
Did that make sense?
So to recap, it does. And to recap for our listeners, it's really, you know, your nutraceuticals and supplements that you're taking, they're regulated as food, which means they're not really regulated. It's there's not much going on. But homeopathy, on the other hand, is regulated like a drug. So it's got more regulation around it. So there are groups, because of news out there, that are saying, oh, my goodness, they're trying to take away homeopathy or say it doesn't work. So they've got petitions going, and they're thinking they're doing the right thing. But actually, the companies that are doing things right, that are really regulating it and trying to stay within the parameters, think it's a good thing, because then it makes everybody stay to the standards that they should. So to really help, it's not, the fight is not to take it away from the market. It's really, it's for regulation. And so I think that we need to be understanding, and our listeners understanding, that they think that somebody's trying to take it away from them, and they're really not. They're really just trying to make sure that it's regulated for safety. And I think we need to make that distinction.
Well, there's two regulatory frameworks that we pay attention to. One is regulation for safety, and the other is regulation for efficacy or effectiveness, how it works in clinical practice. And so both of those things work together. And so if something is more dangerous, then it probably needs to be shown to be more effective and more efficacious.
Right. That's right. So, you know, FDA, a lot of things that we can say about them or against them or for them, not being able to have enough people on the ground to really keep us really, really safe. But that is the purpose, and that is what this is supposed to be doing, and especially with these injectables that we're going to talk about later. So, Sandy, any thoughts on your end before we move on? I want to talk, let Dr. Riley talk about this research reporting guidelines, because that's quite fascinating. So now we can put some data. Now we can say, yes, there is more science. There are more studies behind these natural therapies. But as far as the regulation, did you have anything else that you think the listeners might need to hear or have clarified?
Well, I really want to hear more about Dr. Riley's work, but we're going to break shortly, and I don't want to interrupt him in the middle of it. So we'll get onto that when we come back. The only thing that I want to say is, you know, I think the media often create more problems than not. Mm-hmm. Certainly in England, there has been so much misinformation about homeopathy, and there have been scare stories that, you know, that because the NHS is taking some of its clinics, homeopathic clinics, out of the hospitals, they don't want them there anymore. The press is interpreting that as, oh, we've got to shut it down. It's no good. It's not working. And I think the fact that, you know, what you've told me about the regulations, I think, is going to make that a lot clearer and a lot simpler. So I'm really pleased to hear that. We're going to break now. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. You're listening to What Is Going On's Truth in Medicine show.
And I'm Dr. Donise Warden, and tonight we are examining the case for homeopathy.
We'll be back with more after this break. Don't go away.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Hello, this is Dr. Donise Warden, and I'm excited to tell you about homeopathic injections from Hevert Pharmaceuticals. I utilize them in my practice for pain, inflammation, depression, and other medical conditions. I'm achieving excellent results, and I've seen no adverse reactions. I encourage you to explore these novel treatments.
Call Hevert today at 855-387-6466 to find a practitioner in your area to administer these FDA-registered medications. 855-387-6466.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Dr. David Riley, please tell our listeners about your system that allows physicians to collect data on natural substances. Dr. Riley, are you still with us?
Dr. Riley?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
Okay, good. Great.
Thought we'd lost you. Did you hear? Did you hear what I said?
Yes, I did.
Okay, great. So, the floor is yours.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about evidence in terms of evidence for effectiveness. And so everybody, regardless of whether you're practicing, whether you're doing massage therapy or acupuncture or conventional medicine or homeopathic medicine, I think all of us today want to see evidence for effectiveness. And so one of the ways we establish evidence for effectiveness is to begin to do some research on how things work, and then we can begin to compare therapies to each other. Homeopathy is a little bit more difficult. In conventional medicine, a lot of the research is done because the drug effects are big. And so it's easy to separate out a drug effect from a placebo effect when you have a large known effect. When you have subtle effects that affect an organism at many different levels, its interaction with other therapies and its interaction with the organism can often be quite difficult to sort out. So in homeopathy, in addition to the clinical trials that we do in conventional medicine, which in some cases have been done in homeopathic conditions, there's another thing called homeopathic provings, which are a type of qualitative research, if you will, dating back to the time of Hahnemann, and actually are one of the first kinds of research that was done systematically. And so the way it works in a homeopathic drug proving is you take a homeopathic remedy prepared homeopathically, so it's not an herbal medicine, it's not a full-strength medicine, it's a homeopathically prepared medicine in some dilution, and you give it to people who are healthy, and you have them keep a journal, and they note the symptom pictures that they note the symptoms that they experience. So in order to put a context for this, I'm sure that most listeners have heard of allergy desensitization. It's part of conventional medicine. And so in allergy desensitization, you may go into an allergist and you may say, you know, I have these seasonal allergies and they're really bad. And so they'll put these pinpricks on your back, and they might say, well, yes, you have a ragweed allergy. And so what are they going to treat you with? They're going to treat you with subcutaneous injections of the very thing that causes the allergy. And so what they're trying to do is educate the body that it does not have to overreact to ragweed, and that if you can begin to desensitize the body, you can kind of modulate the immune system so that you have a normal reaction rather than an allergic reaction to ragweed. That's very similar to what we're doing in homeopathy. And so in homeopathic drug proving, you have a group of people who take a homeopathically prepared medication, and they note the symptoms they experience. And then those symptoms that have occurred in a healthy person are potentially useful for somebody when they're experiencing an illness with those kinds of symptoms. So it's true that we all know that illnesses have names. And the names are often associated with what we think causes the illness, but sometimes they're associated with a symptom picture. So, for example, when somebody has the flu, whether we know exactly what's causing it, we have a picture in our mind of what are the symptoms that occur with the flu. We know that people often have congestion. They may have a runny nose. They may have bronchitis. They may have cough, they may have low energy. All of those symptoms together form a picture, and everybody's picture of a flu is slightly different. Some people may lose their voice. Other people may have a really bad cough. Other people may have a cold. Other people may sneeze. And all of those things are the unique response of an individual to whatever it is that's causing the problem. And so in homeopathy, there's a belief that those nuances of a symptom picture that's associated with a remedy can be sorted out through homeopathic drug proving, and then they can be tested in clinical practice so that we can begin to refine the application of the medicine. And then we can use those two points of reference, as well as what we know about the conventional toxicology or effects associated with the medication. And so that whole three-legged stool of the symptom picture of the remedy in healthy people, a person's response when they have an illness, and the toxicology are the way that homeopathy started. But very quickly, people began saying, well, if it works that way, we can also focus on a more clinical course of what's going on, and we can begin to put some of these medicines together. So in other words, if a gelsemium and a calibichromatum and other medicines that are used in homeopathy for the flu tend to work if you present with a precise symptom picture and you know how to do it, we can begin to put some of those medications together and come up with what's called a complex remedy that could be used by practitioners or patients to begin to treat some of these conditions. And then, of course, there are multiple routes of administration of medicine, from topical, where you apply them on the skin, and probably most of the people who listen to this show have used arnica or have used calendula or some of the other medications that are available, either herbally or homeopathically. And then there can be topical. They're sometimes used as suppositories, and also they can be used as injections. And so those are all different routes of administration.
Right. So Dr. Riley, that was a great explanation. Well, that was a great explanation of, you know, in Hahnemann's day, how we were doing provings to be able to see if you took belladonna and you turned bright red on the right side of your body. They said, okay, that's what it would do if it was poisoning you. But today you have technology that you put together that you've been working with me on. So these new kinds of injections, these new more modern, and we're actually not looking at it from a proving standpoint. We're doing it, we're analyzing it just like I would a medication or any other thing from a traditional medical standpoint. So we're looking at symptom relief, we're looking at ranges of motion, all the ways that we would report how we're looking at a drug or a surgery. We're putting those parameters into your new system, and I think it's very important and very exciting. We've got some case histories we've already put together for our listeners to know, with many indications of problems that people have had. And then we're out there and we're lecturing and showing physicians, here are the real cases, here's the research. And we can show all the different parameters that get better, and we're showing it in the same way that they would be looking at the way it would be presented to them if it was a pharmaceutical drug. So it's gaining that ability to say, here it is, here's the real research, and the way that they're used to looking at it. And your way of collecting that data for me to give you the information from the clinic side to Dr. Riley, and him to input it into the system, and then me to get back out there, and Dr. Riley to get back out there and show these cases, it's really helping to establish homeopathy as a system that should be looked at more importantly. And I just want to say one more thing. In some areas of conventional medical research, homeopathy is actually coming together with an individualized medical side. So we look at a person as an individual and we treat them that way. And yesterday, and I can't announce it yet, but I will say that I was in an integrative oncologist office, one of the largest integrative hospitals in the nation, a magnet, telling them about three homeopathic medicines. And it looks like that they're going to actually put it into the pharmacy, not just say go to Sprouts or Whole Foods or go get this from your local doctor that does homeopathy. They're actually going to stock it in their pharmacy the way it's looking. And that's a huge step forward and very exciting.
Tell me more about this personalized medicine approach then, because that seems to be an emerging thing. How easy is that going to be to accomplish?
Well, I think let's take a step back and look at research. There's two basic kinds of research. When you're doing a clinical trial and have controls, you're establishing efficacy of a drug or a therapy or an intervention. And by the very fact, the better a clinical trial is, probably the more rigorous the controls are. And that's useful for establishing conditions around causality so that we know that this probably is linked with that. But it doesn't tell us very much about how it's going to work in an individual patient. And so if we look at efficacy as being information that we get from clinical trials, we can look at effectiveness as the information we get from the actual application of a medicine in clinical practice. And that's what I've been most interested in. And so I'd like to mention briefly, like, reporting guidelines, so that they sound kind of dry. I personally find them quite juicy and interesting. But in what happened was, as I mentioned, how the FDA began requiring pre-approval testing for all new pharmaceuticals and medical devices. And everybody thought, well, okay, great, we're off to the races. Here we go. But then they noticed that you could have 20 clinical trials on an intervention and 10 might be positive and 10 might be negative. And how do you sort that out? So then we began developing a technique called systematic reviews and meta-analyses. And then we realized, in fact, we needed to standardize publication, because in order to do these techniques, we needed to know that when somebody said that they had done a clinical trial and done this, they reported the various aspects that allowed you to evaluate that trial. And so likewise for clinical practice, I've led the development of guidelines for how to systematically, accurately, and completely report the information from the point of care and published as a case report. And case reports are having a huge resurgence in medical publication these days. And probably some of this has to do with the phenomena that we've talked about in this section of this show of individualization. And even in conventional medicine, the genetic revolution has led to an understanding that, in fact, clinical trials on populations may not be an accurate reflection of whether a medicine works, because we need to know if a medicine is going to work in an individual patient. And so how can we individualize trials? And there's a way to do this, and methods that we won't talk about today called N of one trials, where you run a clinical trial with one person. And a case report is like that in that there's one person, but it's looking backwards. And so when Denise sees a patient and has an outcome, if we can begin to create reporting standards for how she's going to report what she did for a patient, so that we know that a patient came in with this kind of a diagnosis, had this kind of a history and these kind of treatments in the past, and now Denise is treating them and they're having these kind of outcomes, we can begin to compare outcomes across interventions. So wouldn't it be nice if, we'll take migraine headaches as an example, wouldn't it be nice if everybody
Dr. Riley, I'd like to give them an actual case that I gave you the data,
right.
We put it into a case, and I think let me, if you don't mind, let me jump in here. I had a patient that had been seeing me for 15 years, fibromyalgia, depression, pain in about 8 different areas of her body. She was on multiple medications, not from me, but from other doctors, and was not getting better, hadn't in years. I was the only one that she seemed to think that was keeping her head above ground. So we started these homeopathic injections on her, and what we saw in one injection were major improvements, so much so that the patient said, I can't believe this. I don't even want to believe it. We continued for 6 weeks. She came in every week. I asked her how her left foot was, how the top of her hand was, all the places, and she had to rate those pain points. Most of them started at 9 and 10. Her fatigue was over the top. It was like a 9 or a 10. Her depression was very, very bad. So in one treatment, she got better, and we followed her for 6 more, giving her these injections. By the 6th treatment, she was at 0 on everything. That means 0 means everything got better, went away, except her hips were bothering her. But guess why? because she was feeling better and she started exercising on her bike that she hadn't done in years. So that's a case history for our listeners to know. We take a patient, we look at all the things that are wrong with that patient. We have them rate it, and if we have different scales to do it, but once they rate it, then we can actually look at it and say what things actually got better in what amount of time. And that is, I've done that over and over again with these patients, over and over again, where we are collecting that data, we're seeing what's getting better, and your new system of me giving you those numbers, and then we get graphs, and then we're able to publish. When Dr. Riley's talking about publishing, that goes to major journals where more physicians and more people are able to see these things. And that's important and appreciative that you put that together. So now those of us on the ground treating patients, we're able to put this data into a system that lets us present it in a way that's very easy to see.
Yes, and so I think this is the challenge: is can we begin to systematically collect data so that we can be transparent and accurate and begin to know what works for which patients and under which circumstances.
That's right. And you know, we'll talk more, I know, after the break about these particular injections and what I'm seeing and what we're seeing. Some of it is quite exciting, and I can't wait to tell all of our listeners about it. But I will say that, you know, you've been in homeopathy, been utilizing it for a while. I've been using homeopathy clinically on others for 20 years. But I will start with this. My own child, who's 27 years old, I attribute to homeopathy. We'd been everywhere, done everything. This was before I went into medicine. Nobody could figure things out. My husband and I started taking homeopathic drops. And it was literally that month that we got pregnant. And when we were told there is no way that this will happen. So I'm a big believer. I'm licensed in it, clinically licensed in homeopathy. That's part of what we do as naturopathic medical doctors. And I'm a big believer. And these injections are just faster and better because they go right through to the liver, and we don't need the GI to, you know, have to do anything with these oral products. All right. Go ahead.
Yes, we are. I was just going to say, I think regular listeners to the show know that I've been taking homeopathy for many years. You're listening to What Is Going On's Truth in Medicine show. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Hello, this is Dr. Donice Warden, and I'm excited to tell you about homeopathic injections from Hevert Pharmaceuticals. I utilize them in my practice for pain, inflammation, depression, and other medical conditions. I'm achieving excellent results, and I've seen no adverse reactions. I encourage you to explore these novel treatments.
Call Hevert today at 855-387-6466 to find a practitioner in your area to administer these FDA-registered medications. 855-387-6466.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, Everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back, Dr. Denise Warden. Earlier in the show and in the commercial breaks, we heard you mention some new injectable homeopathic solutions that are offering some hope for pain, depression, inflammation, and other issues. This is really exciting. Is it a new breakthrough? Tell us more.
You know, it's new in the United States would be the way to say it, somewhat new. We've had them for a few years, and this particular company I'll talk about is a leading manufacturer of homeopathic medicines worldwide. But I've had these in my practice for almost a year and a half to 2 years because I had what's called compassionate use before the FDA got them all the way in for other practitioners to use. And I am always quite astounded at how well the human body and how fast it can make changes when it's given the right information. So I'm very excited. I use these in my practice a lot. And let me just kind of go over this, and then I think our listeners will love to hear it. Hevert is the company that I'm utilizing now with the German injectables. They've had some of these injectables for 30 years, 15 years in Europe. We're just getting them in the United States. But their mission, their particular mission, is to combine a long tradition of homeopathic expertise with their modern pharmaceutical manufacturing. Their family has had this for 60 years, and the grandkids are still running it. And I love the fact that their corporate philosophy is sustainability and a belief that nature is our partner, and that, you know, their manufacturing facility runs entirely 100% on renewable solar and hydroelectric energy. They use certified local farmers' ingredients. These are the kinds of companies that I believe the intention is there, and that may be one of the reasons why their medicines work so well, because they believe in the body, they're doing things right, they take care of their employees, and it's a long history. And so I think in my world, and you hear me talk whenever we talk about anything that we're talking about, is that intention and the companies behind it make a big difference. Well, let's talk about a few of these injectables. Right now we have five. One is called Arnica. Many of your listeners and our listeners have been listening and know about bruises and pain and inflammation with Arnica, but it's underutilized. It's used for so many, many things. That injectable works well, and again, we don't have to rely on the gastrointestinal tract to have to break it down and utilize it. We inject it, it goes directly, it gets to the bloodstream a lot easier. Lymphedon is another injectable for swelling. Anytime we've got swelling or edema, and that includes the lymph nodes or the lymphatic system, and that's part of detox and moving things around. Gelsemium is for painful nerve conditions. I use it for neuropathy, but the manufacturers know, and they can put it on for the FDA registration, for trigeminal neuralgia, sciatica. A lot of our listeners have that, I'm sure. Postherpetic neuralgia. And those of us that use it in our practices use it for any nerve condition. It's very, very helpful. Calm Valera, nervous disorders such as restlessness and sleep disorders, but also for mild depression. I've used it in moderate, but practitioners have to make sure that they're doing that correctly. But mental exhaustion, how many of our listeners are tired, you're depressed, you're not sleeping, but you're also nervous, and we've got that restlessness, and it works well. And we have some data on that. Heparin is an injection for the liver and the gallbladder. And that one, I think it was our sleeper. I have a device. It's a medical device in my clinic called the FibroScan. It analyzes whether a liver is fatty or whether it's fibrotic, which means it may turn to cirrhosis. So is the liver stiff or is it fatty? It's a very accurate way of doing it. It's been clinically trialed against biopsies. So we know we're getting good data. I started utilizing these Heparin injections to see, and I already knew it had worked on gallbladders whenever I saw that the sludge was getting better on films, on ultrasound. It also documented it that their blood markers had gone down. But now I'm able to see it on a scan, and the liver improvement so far, and we don't have enough data. Dr. Riley and I, we're working on getting the data where we can really publish this. But right now, from what I've seen with the number of patients I've been going through, this injection is helping fatty liver. And, you know, I'll make that statement now. It's preliminary, but right now, if it continues to look like it's looking fantastic. And for pain, inflammation, I'm a diplomate in the American Academy of Pain Management. I work a lot in pain management. And if I can give somebody an injection into a joint or wherever they're hurting, and it's not a steroid, which destroys tissue and bone, but it works as well or lasts as long, obviously that is a very big benefit to our listeners to know about these things. They have alternatives to steroids. They have alternatives to many of the other traditional medicines that may have side effects. They can be helpful, but like Dr. Riley's talking about, there's efficaciousness, they may work, but we've also got to look at the safety toxicity studies. And homeopathics to date, these injections in this country, there have been no reported side effects or problems with these medications that I'm aware of, and none that I believe that even the manufacturer is aware of. So this is exciting. I'm excited to bring this to our listeners.
Oh, I want to say one thing here. I mean, with statistics showing that 3 million adolescents aged 12 to 17 have had at least one major depressive episode in the past year, this is going to be a real boon, because we do not want our youth on drugs.
Right. If we have other ways to work on that, you know, there's weight gain, there's addictions, you know, the antidepressants, they have a lot of side effects. They really do. And again, this is newer treatment in the United States. As we collect more data, as we can see more, we can make more statements to say, well, how do these look and how do they compare with these medications and with the drugs? Right now it's early, but right now I can say in my clinical practice, it's been beneficial. And I've got some case histories and data to show that in these individual patients.
And it sounds as though they work quickly. Is that correct?
You know, they do. You know, if it's a chronic condition, it might take a little bit of time to work on it. But even in conditions that people have had for many years, I've been teaching these therapeutic injections across the United States for the past about 2 months. And I just got back from Florida. We have these groups of doctors, and I have them inject each other so that they can learn and they can understand it. And they are surprised. The look on their face, they say, I've had this for years. And in one injection, they're saying, I cannot believe that I have relief right now. In my clinical practice, what it reminds me, Sandy, is that if you get the right medicine in the right place, one injection can make a major difference, sometimes take away a chronic condition quickly, not always, but sometimes. But if it's acute, which means it just happened, if we can get a hold of somebody in those early stages, these medicines work very, very well. There will always be a case that these won't work on, but I will tell you right now, I have yet to have a case that I haven't seen benefit. And sometimes, to the extent that it shocks me, where I say, how did that work so quickly?
Wow.
Dr. Riley, do you have a comment on that? I know that we'd say, go ahead. You know, I think we need
yes.
to listen to
I
ask
think that
tell
there's
our
a lot
listeners
of different...
right now. We've got a delay. Yeah.
I think we need to be able to allow a patient preference and a physician experience and clinical expertise be a part of the equation about how we choose what's being done and what's being implemented.
Right, and that medical freedom. That's right. Medical freedom has been almost forgotten or lost, and it's time for patients and for all of us to stand up and say that we do have a right to be able to choose these, or at least to try them if they're not, you know, if there's no known side effects or far less safety profile. Why wouldn't we try this in helping our patients?
Yeah. Well, obviously, the next question is, because, you know, many listeners are going to want to know the answer to this one, is how can they get them?
Well, I think the easiest part now is just go to the Hevert, H-E-V-E-R-T website. They will be able to direct them to physicians in their areas that have been trained. Even if they haven't, they can tell their physician about them, and they can easily set up an account and get these injectables in their practice to try. So I think the easiest right now would be to contact the company, and they would help them find doctors that know these types of injections or are open to them. And if not, they can tell their doctor about it if they're willing to take the time to learn.
And what about outside the USA?
Well, you know, in some parts around the world, you know, homeopathy has a much bigger presence. If you go to India, a significant portion of the practitioners are homeopaths, and then, of course, there's Ayurvedic medicine and conventional medicine. In Germany, which is where Hahnemann was from, homeopathy still has a major presence. And this is, of course, independent of whether it's going to be covered by an insurance company. But it's widely available in most of the European Union, not all of the European Union, and it ebbs and flows in terms of its acceptance and, of course, its attacks from critics. But I think to some extent, some of the attacks are probably as a result of the acceptance that it, in fact, has, because it does challenge the conventional thinking about how things work, which has been pretty much locked into a biochemical pharmaceutical model and has not paid a lot of attention to other avenues of healing and treatment.
I have to ask I heard about it in England, that some people were talking about a homeopathic injectable for cancer.
I'm not sure either one of us read. I know that there's nothing that in this country that is an injectable that has been indicated for cancer. There are homeopathic doctors that treat cancer patients, would be a way to say it, and symptomatic relief. Some of these homeopathics in different forms are utilized for the side effects, the vomiting, the nausea, the radiation burns. They can be used that way. But for treating, it's a whole different story. In fact, in France, Dr. Bagot has written a book, and he's in the oncology wards, but he is allowed to use homeopathy. But again, it is for the side effects, not seen as an actual treatment. And I'm not aware of, are you, Dr. Riley, of an injection that's being touted as a cancer treatment or cure?
No, I would say most commonly various alternative therapies are used as adjunctive therapies based on physician experience or patient preference, but they tend to be around the edges of a treatment or incorporated in as part of the treatment, just as, for example, a diet and nutrition are now. And so that would be a way to begin to improve the body's overall health so that any treatment is likely to be effective.
That's right. So they're allowing a lot more of these, but again, they're not considered the treatment. They're really considered helpful with the side effects or trying to get the body a little bit healthier to be able to withstand some of the traditional, cancer treatments. That being said, Sandy, you know, I think we have a lot to learn, a lot that we can look at. And remember that the body, I believe, is the best healer out there. It knows what it needs to do. It knows how to do it if we give it the right information. Do I think someday we may be able to help the body in fighting its cancer with multiple ways, which we are already, diet, nutrition, ketogenic diet, hyperbaric, a lot of things we talked about on the last show. But is homeopathy a piece there? I believe it may be, but we can't say it at this point.
Well, before we bring the show to a close, I'd like to ask, Dr. Riley, what is the best way for the public who have been misinformed and are getting, up in arms and starting petitions, etc.? What's the best way to support homeopathy?
Well, I suppose the best way is to use it. Because that's as much of a convincing testimony as anything else. I think that it's important to recognize that homeopathy has a unique position, regulated as a drug therapy, which means that it falls under the jurisdiction of the FDA and the FTC. And, of course, so do other products as well. But as we discussed earlier, vitamins, minerals, dietary supplements, herbal medications are generally regulated under the Dietary Supplement and Health Education Act, which was in 1996, but they're not regulated as drugs, where homeopathy is. So I would say that most homeopathic products that are manufactured by the companies that have a long-standing tradition like Hepford have a high level of safety, and people can feel confident about the reliability of the product that they're getting. And so I think that helps people a lot.
It does. And somebody, you know, one remedy at a time that they can. Yeah. Well, just that, you know, the remedies, people go to their health food store and they buy a single remedy, you know, usually by Boron or those kinds of companies, and they are reputable. They've been around a long time. Those can be helpful. But, you know, I think that we're learning more and more about it. And I was very encouraged yesterday in the large oncology cancer center that they, the integrative oncologist, of course, was interested in, is pushing for it. The fact that they would even consider bringing it into the pharmacy, I think, is a very big step for homeopathy. And in my practice, I use it daily. I use a lot of the injectables. I use the topicals and the creams. And I think patients need to experience, you know, to go to practitioners who understand and know what they're doing.
I'm afraid that's all we have time for. Dr. David Riley, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Yes. And I'm Dr. Warden, and if you want to learn the latest about how to live the healthiest life and not fear cancer or other diseases, join us on the last Thursday of every month. We plan to educate, empower, enlighten you.
Until next month, it's goodbye from me.